Oh God. Oh my God.
It's like the worst Foley work. Just like shaming ghosts. Thunking along.
Ghost shaming and thunk noises.
You're a whore.
What is this? A family reunion? Fucking get out of here. How many chicks you been with belly button rings? I was talking to Pete about this today.
One.
Oh.
One? Yeah. I'm only a one, too.
Now, see,
one as well.
I've been a bit of a whore, so a lot.
Yeah,
like I don't have a tangible number.
Allegedly, every chick Pete has ever dated has had a belly button ring.
Interesting.
Yeah, that's weird.
That is a weird Pete fact.
Yeah,
I like that. I like that knowledge.
Pete got married at like 12, right?
Yeah, that's about right.
So his dating was one, and she had a belly button ring.
Yeah,
I think you got the measure of it, Sean.
Yeah.
So earlier today, I saw a screen capture of something from a Facebook group called Halloween Freaks. And this guy, Ted, just said, if you're like me, you know that Halloween is the perfect time for fucking and sucking and dripping wet with sex fucking pussies if hard. Frightening cocks. Like this if you agree. And Andrea had to come back with, this is not what this page is about.
But Willem Dafoe did like that.
Yeah, absolutely. With frightening cocks.
Yeah, just an eggplant emoji. Thanks.
Oh man.
God.
I love this time of year. Freaks come out at night.
Well, I'm fucking exhausted and got my flu shot yesterday, and it's fucking wiped me out. So welcome back to Cage Match, colon, a roundabout way of meeting Nicolas Cage. My name's Sean. I'm here with...
Nick.
And our producer...
Peter, hello.
And this week, we watched the movie Sonny, which was directed by Nicolas Cage.
Yeah, his one and only.
Yeah.
Which is kind of badass, and also weird that this is his one choice.
Yeah.
I get it. Based on everything I know about the man, which is very little, I get it.
So I don't know anything about the source material for this, aside from, you know, little bits of trivia or whatever. I'm curious if it was also written to be set in New Orleans, or if Nicolas Cage took it and reset it in New Orleans, because that sounds about right.
It does sound about right that he would have put it there as like a passion project.
Right, because the author set it up as autobiographical or semi-autobiographical.
Where did you guys watch this movie?
At home.
Thanks, Nick. I had a really hard time finding it on the less up and up platforms. Mm-hmm. The first one I downloaded was a movie claiming to be Sonny, but it was... Sonny, S-O-N-I, a Hindi film from 2018.
Josie started that one, and she's like, it's right here. It's free, and there's no ads. And
super
I'm like,
easy.
Peter said this isn't the one for us.
Yeah. So then, weirdly enough, the one I found is named Sanny.
Oh, Sanny.
Yeah. And that is the correct one, but weird. Wouldn't recommend trying to find this in the more dubious parts of the internet. Especially given the fact that you wouldn't necessarily know going into it. You're like, okay, it's a movie about a male sex worker. This porno sure looks like it could be it.
Sure.
I mean, yeah.
James Franco's changed.
Yeah.
I mean, has he? Hey, Nick, can I read you my quick review I sent to Peter last night?
Uh-huh.
I finished it. All in all, positive in the film, despite it not really having much of a plot. Well shot, acting was serviceable to good, nothing atrocious, the weird self-insert brings the whole thing down from drama to farce, but otherwise, it's a movie I watched.
I'd put it a little bit above it's a movie I watched, but your review is pretty fucking accurate.
Yeah. Most of those points are pretty spot on there. I did feel a little better about the acting, especially James Franco, just as a character piece for him. I think he did a pretty good job about it. I mean, it's James Franco.
Yeah. I mean, we can get the hard part of that over. He seems like a douchebag. He's done douchebag shit. He is a good actor, but like, fuck that guy.
Yeah.
And his weird face. Okay. I got to talk about his face for a minute.
He does squint a lot.
And his face, it's one of those, like, everything turns into a raisin. Like, it's all face. Yeah. Like, it's all squinched up face. So he smiles and everything is just.
I do love his smile. His smile is actually kind of infectious for me. Because it's just so big and everything about it is smile.
Okay. I can give that to you. I had a note of I hate his smile, but yeah. It's mostly because I hate his squinch face.
Well, I hate everything above the nose.
Just mouth zone. Yeah. Pretty good.
He mouth smiles real good.
Yeah. You know, I'd trade Leto in a second.
Oh, any day.
Any day.
Wait.
You could bring Franco back. I won't watch his movies, but I'll hate him less than Leto.
Oh, okay.
Perfect.
No, I agree with you.
For a second,
I was like, what? Wait, are you super pro Leto all of a sudden?
No.
Watch Neutron Aries and just really fucking hot for Leto.
Yeah. Sean was the only person to watch it.
My favorite thing I've seen my favorite thing that I've seen about Tron Aries is a thing on the internet where someone's like, in the movie Tron, Jared Leto's name is John. His name is John Tron. None of you will deny this because none of you will admit to have seen this film.
I do love John Tron. And what you said earlier was Jonathan Tron.
Jonathan Tron. I added to the joke. Yeah.
Yeah. Prove me wrong. Go to the movie. You're not going to do it. You Morbius fuck. Yeah. All right, Nick, why don't you give us the summary of this movie?
I'm so fucking tired right now.
Oh, yeah. So James Franco comes back after being dishonorably discharged from the military. So he's done with his army career, decides to go back to New Orleans before heading out to take up a job with a buddy running a bookstore in Texas. So he comes back to New Orleans. We get introduced to his life where, you know, he lives with his mom, who is the, I wouldn't even say the madam. She just runs a whore in like a whorehouse, like singular whorehouse. Yeah. And you
can only
has like,
the one bedroom.
Yeah. One bedroom has to share it with whore. And hey, I'm getting all my whore commentary in now. You asked for this.
Yeah, watching this film, I was just like, well, not even gonna try.
Yeah, this is Nick's film.
Let's talk about your quote now. No.
Yeah, I'm working through them all right now.
Yeah.
So he gets to come home, share a room with a whore, and his mom's pressuring him into being a whore again because she raised him as like the best male whore in New Orleans. And but he doesn't want to do that. So he tries to get out of it, but the life sucks him back in. And it's him dealing with all the horrible consequences of being a whore.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's pretty good. There's also like a dad theme. And complications with
daddy.
Mom.
Yes, there's some daddy problems. There's some daddy mommy problems. Issues.
Yeah.
But
I mean, I'd say the biggest mommy issue is she was whoring out her son at age 12.
Yeah, super fucked up. Like, all of it is pretty fucked up.
Yeah.
So, yeah, like, the little cast rundown. So, you got James Franco as the main character, Sonny. You've got Brenda Bleffen as Jewel, his mom. Harry Dean Stanton is Henry, who for most of the movie, just is like, okay, this guy who's been around in his life, who's sort of a fuck up drunk gambler.
Yeah, but he fucking kills it. This
He's
is
great.
One of my favorite Harry Dean Stanton films.
And this. And he turns out he's his dad, but that's later. We'll figure that out. Mina Savari in, like, so she's been in, at this point, like, American Pie and American Pie 2 and American Beauty. A lot of American.
All American actress.
All American actress. And then, like, her career, like, she doesn't fall off in, like, a crazy way. She just sort of goes the way of, like, aging women actresses, where she becomes like a TV actor after her film career kind of tails off. So yeah. she made stuff like last year. She's still in the scene.
Interesting.
But this is one of her last like big leading roles for a while. And then beyond that, like Nick Cage plays a character named Only Acid Yellow because he is a drug addled pimp wearing yellow.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
I mean, yeah, if your name's Acid Yellow, you don't go around in chartreuse.
That's true.
That's confusing.
That's very confusing. And that's kind of it. The only other one that I liked was that dude who gambles with his with Harry Dean Stanton.
Oh yeah, yeah.
With the fucking giant cigar.
Oh, who is that guy? He looks super familiar.
Yeah, his name is Seymour Castle. He's been in like a billion things. He's just one of those like bit actors that you know his face. And mm-hmm. like you, his face looks like it always should have a cigar. And in this movie, it does.
Yep. Yeah.
That's Sonny, folks.
That is kind of Sonny. How Nick, how do you feel as a person who likes New Orleans? How did this rep New Orleans for you?
God, it made me want to go back to the 70s because every time I've been to New Orleans, zero prostitutes.
This is set in 1991. Isn't
yeah,
it?
What a shame.
Yeah, no toots at all. The only toots I got were from some dork's trombone.
Did you ever see a guy lick a guitar?
Ooh. I saw some mean licks on guitar, but I don't know if I saw a guy lick a guitar. That guy was pretty wild.
He was pretty wild.
That drunk ass scene. Yeah. Have you ever had like whiskey and club sodas and like slammed it on the table to ultra fizz it out?
No, none of that made sense. Sean, have you had that experience? Like, what the fuck was he doing?
I wanted to ask if anyone knew what was going on there.
Okay, so later in the movie, we'll get to it, but Sonny is like,
timeline doesn't matter.
Yeah, everything's gone out the window. His life has fallen to shit. He's back in the game. He's sad about the game. His dad has died. We'll talk about that
too.
He learns who his dad was. So he goes out and he gets fucked up like big time. And he's drinking whiskeys and like club soda, but he fills it up, puts a napkin on top of this cup, and then slams it.
Right, to make it all fizz up.
But why?
I don't know. I can only imagine that it's probably like a different like mouthfeel, like the drinking experience has to be different because like you're champagne. Drinking something. Yeah. That's like ultra fizzy. Like the bubbles are just going crazy at that point. And then you slam a whiskey soda that way. I mean, I want to try it.
I'm curious about it,
but I can't imagine being a bartender and allowing that mess of it.
Yeah.
And then every time a new napkin. So what's he doing with those other napkins? He's throwing them on the ground. You gotta fucking clean that shit up.
Yeah, it was interesting.
But if there was ever a city to do it, I think New Orleans would be pretty into that. Most of the action of this movie takes place around Bourbon Street and the adjacent blocks, which is just as, I mean, like, no whores, but it's just as wild now as then. I'm ready to go back to New Orleans. This movie fueled me up.
Yeah, it's a pretty good, like, interesting picture of New Orleans. I mean, like, it's definitely gritty, crappy, you know, like, here's the
which is still New Orleans, like,
yeah, right,
without the prostitution or sure. the visible right. prostitution,
right?
That's still New Orleans. Like, I don't know if Katrina really fucked that city up or not. I mean, that's a obviously it did, and that's a take that I will
sure no, fucked it up in a different way, like fucked up the culture of it, maybe not, you know,
it's right
like that the culture of it and
well the heart of the city is still very strong,
right? You know, the restrictive aspect of it is really like Republican douchebags fucking with puritanical rules. Fuck off.
But Josie and I were talking about it and she's like, this is a great city to film like this kind of period piece because the architecture of these parts of the city have not changed.
Yeah, same.
I mean,
yeah.
There are buildings and homes there that have existed for like 150, 200 years.
Sean, have you been to New Orleans?
No.
Okay. Let's go on a cocaine-fueled trip to New Orleans.
Oh, I can show you all the places that Nicolas Cage has lived and the place where he will rest.
Oh, that's right.
Yep.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, his pyramids.
Can't take
there.
His mausoleum from him.
I do feel like we need to go see his mausoleum.
It's pretty sweet.
Yeah.
So I agree.
He actually, I'm down. It's two plots. He bought two plots.
Yeah, one for me and one for him.
He just doesn't know it yet. He was one of the last people that was able to buy into St. Louis Cemetery number
That's
one.
That's wild.
So you can't buy into it anymore. So
yeah, because people like us want to buy in now. We're taking down property value.
Yeah, exactly.
Yep.
My bones are going to ruin this property value.
So this movie, like, I feel like it has a strong start. Like, the whole thing is, like, he gets home from the army. He wants to start a new life, get clean, get away from his, like, the mom who, like, made a whore out of him, does nothing to actually do that.
Well, he tried the one thing.
He
tried to get a job at the suit shop.
Yeah.
And was immediately like, no, and then straight up no.
Also, those ladies solicited him while he was there.
Yeah, which is bad business.
Bad biz.
I understand.
What I was going to say is, like, you know, he wants to get out of the life, but, you know, everyone through, like, circumstance and manipulation gets pulled back in. And as soon as he's back in, every trick, every Lady John, like, shorts him. And, you know, he gets more and more mm-hmm. agitated by the whole thing. And kind of halfway through the film, he's just like, well, this is who I am now. This is all I can ever be. And then it's just kind of sad the rest of the film.
Yeah, it is very heartbreaking to watch him come back like full of vigor. He's got an enthusiasm for books and literature mm-hmm. and everything about his life from the moment he gets back into New Orleans. It's just like, sorry, dude. Sorry, Sonny. You're the best dick for hire in town, and that's all you'll ever be.
So that was one of my questions for you, actually, Nick, is like,
what's it like being the best dick for hire?
Yes, thank you. No, my question is, like, these movies are all sort of like predicated on the fact that, like, you come back to your town and, like, everyone fucking knows you and you're pulled back into the game. But, like, New Orleans isn't a small city, right? I mean, it's not, like, huge, but the idea that, like, the second he gets back, everyone's like, that's that best dick I've ever had. It's
yeah.
like, oh, hey, Sonny, I'm at the grocery store. Look at this eggplant. And he's like, yeah, I know.
It's kind of, no, like, obviously I've never lived there, but it's regional. Like, everything he's talking about is, like, the quarter. He even mentions, like, I can't go anywhere in the quarter without being recognized for
okay,
what
fair
I
enough.
Am
for being a big dick yeah. whatever swanger.
So yeah, most of it, and we're still talking about the 70s and stuff too, or I think it's 70s 80s, something like that. That kind
I think
of
it was
range.
91. That's what, like, yeah. Didn't it say 1991 in the beginning of the film?
Oh, I can't read.
just like Sonny.
I pretend. I'm real good pretender.
He's also working, like, richer people. It's not just his neighborhood. Like, they're kind of far afield. Like, they go to the
That's
rich
true.
Folks' house to work the double.
Yeah. Yeah, there's a little bit of time spent outside of the quarter for sure.
So like, he gets to that point where he's like, well, this is who I am. But then what's his girlfriend's name? What's the
her name's Carol.
Carol. She decides that, you know, maybe they can't change, but they could at least try for anything else. And rather than, you know, him being like, sure, he's just like, nope, this is who we are. This is all we'll ever be. Mm-hmm. And so first half, hopeful. Second half, crushes someone else's hope.
Yeah, he's doing exactly what his mom did to him.
Yeah.
So it's real sad.
Is this movie
watching
good?
I think it is. I think good. It's actually kind of good.
I don't think, like, okay, despite my, like, very it's fine review of it, it is fine. Like, and the, like I said, the acting is for the most part good. I only have a few, there's only a few things where I'm just like, I don't know about that, but the acting's good. It's directed shockingly well for I didn't expect it to be directed
it's
well at all.
Really well, like it's beautiful.
It's well filmed well.
Yeah, the score is actually really
good.
The
score is really good. Nicolas Cage is, as an actor, the weakest moment of this.
Yeah,
totally.
Oh, it's that's a whole different movie.
Yeah.
Yeah. I would watch that movie, but well, I would have to watch that movie.
Yeah. it meanders a bit. It's there's not a strong through line throughout, but like it's well done. Like you can tell the people who made it cared about what they were making, and they made something that I don't know how culturally important it is, but it isn't bad by any means.
Yeah, it could have used a little more like structural through line for it. Everything that happens with the characters is pretty much in line and it tracks well, but there's just not something that really makes it go scene to scene, unfortunately.
Yeah.
Beyond just beating Sonny down.
Yeah. If they would have spent more than like two scenes hinting about the daddy issues, like if that was like his through line, like his dad wasn't around, so his mom took advantage of him. His dad wasn't around, so he went to the army. If like that was the through line throughout, then that would have tied up made the ending and his like kind of heel turn make so much more sense.
Yeah. And that one scene where he pulls the picture down off the wall.
Right.
And it's like, well, I didn't really love that story of it. I mean, like I enjoyed the story of like, oh, my daddy came in and
protected my mom,
scared some dude off. Yeah. I mean, like it just sort of came out of nowhere. It felt like it was just kind of added in, or like a scene was built to tell that story.
Yeah.
There was nothing bringing us to that story.
Yeah. Like I said, I just don't think there's much of a through line throughout that carries the entire, that carries it from scene to scene or carries the entire narrative as
a whole. My feeling on this is like, I really liked this movie and I think it was actually pretty good overall, but like there's basically nothing happens. You know, there's like, it's so thin overall, even though like I liked it because it's so like specifically character driven. So like what I want to talk about is like the performances of sort of the main three characters, you know, it's like Carol
and
Sonny, Jewel, and I guess Henry, his dad.
Yeah. I loved that scene where Henry and Sonny were talking and Henry was like, oh, you got to think about the consequences. And Sonny's like, oh, you think I shouldn't get out? Also, you think I should just stay? And Henry's like, no, but you got to realize, like, just be prepared because the things that you don't have to think about, the things that normal people think about, like paying bills, like going to PTA meetings, like it's hard in a different way. Coming from somebody who makes his living picking pockets and stealing,
yeah, right?
Talking to a male whore.
Okay, so let's get back to the dad, because I think he's my favorite character in this.
I really liked Henry a lot.
So we'll go back to...
He connects really well.
Yeah, we'll go back to Harry Dean Stanton. But how about we do the mom, Brenda Blethyn, Jewel.
Mm-hmm.
What did you all think of her accent?
It was the weakest.
Yeah. I think it's...
I mean...
It tried the hardest.
It did try the hardest.
There are definitely times in it. It veers very close to Channing Tatum's Gambit.
Oh yeah.
Yes.
Yeah. I don't know a lot of, off the beaten path women from Louisiana. Like I don't know a lot of like accents from parishes outside of the main portion of New Orleans or anything. The tourist areas. I don't know the accents of the people who do not get a lot of like outside influence. It could be relatively accurate. It was very distracting, especially in the beginning. I was like, oh, that's what we're doing. Like I got over
Franco.
Fucking Franco's accent pretty quick.
Yeah, I had a note immediately that was like, oof, and then it was like, eh, it's all right.
Yeah, I kind of settled into it and I was like, okay, yeah, actually there is a little bit of that like kind of wet drawl sort of thing.
Gross.
Yeah.
Wet drawl.
Yeah. But the mom was extra and it was,
yeah.
a little off-putting. It took me out of it a lot. But then at the same time, I mean, I have a dad who says crick instead of creek.
Fair enough.
He was raised in Oregon. Like, why does he do that? I don't know. Rural areas.
Wash your hands.
Yeah, he says Washington.
Yeah.
And I live in Washington. Yeah, I live in Washington to him. He lives across the river from Washington, and it's Washington.
It's across the creek to Washington.
Just across the Columbia
that
creek.
Big creek.
That thick creek.
Oh, I don't like that.
I don't like that either.
Yeah, you shouldn't. I mean, rural accents are fucking weird. They take bends, man.
So she reminded me, like, in a very, like, more humanized, toned down version of the mom from Wild at Heart.
That's exactly what I was thinking.
And also Harry Dean Stanton from that, like, he's a very different character. He's almost like the fusion of that character from Wild at Heart and the character from that Dennis Hopper played in Rumblefish. The dad, the drunk dad from that. It's like if you slam fucked those two together, like aesthetically and character wise.
I don't want to think about Harry Dean Stanton and
just Harry Dean Stanton and Dennis Hopper.
Slam fucking.
Listen, man.
And you have problems with the things I say.
Sometimes I can get you. But no, I kept thinking about that. Like, the aesthetic of Dennis Hopper's character from Rumblefish is exactly what this is. It's all like the hat, the style, kind of the fuck up drunk. You know, he's like kind of a nice, likable guy, even though you're like, you're a fuck up.
He's
like,
affable.
Yeah, he's very affable. You're sort of just like, yeah, I probably drank with that guy, you know, like.
Oh, we absolutely drink with those guys.
Yeah.
They're our favorite guys.
That's true.
Just for funsies, I just Googled, was Harry Dean Stanton ever young?
What the fuck?
Because he only ever looks like a 68-year-old man.
I mean, it's a good question.
The first thing that came up, yes, Harry Dean Stanton was young.
Great. Thanks, AI.
Fuck you, AI. Yeah. I don't believe that.
At one point, Harry Dean Stanton was a child. Prove it, bitch.
Yeah.
That looked like a 68-year-old man.
Numerically, yeah.
Yeah, exactly.
He's got some kind of weird version of Benjamin Button's where he came out 68 and he stayed 68.
Just stayed that the entire time.
Yeah.
He's a Highlander.
All right, well, let's talk about him then, because like he's probably my favorite character in this entire thing. Like,
yeah. I think I kind of like his whole like vibe. Like, we kind of get introduced to him. Is our first introduction like him being in jail?
Yeah, and Carol having to go blow the bonds person to get him out.
Jules running this like scam behind the scenes.
She's always using money as kind of motivation for the game. So like I can absolutely see somebody like that being like, oh, well, my fuckboy is in jail. I could pay money to a bondsman or I could just have some other mouth suck his dong off. And I mean, one of those has zero repercussions to me.
Sure. Yeah. True.
I mean, that's the pimping game. To get back to Henry, like, that's how we get introduced to him.
Right.
Henry comes back. He's, you know, lumpy ass Harry Dean Stanton. And
he looks like a melted candle, like just always.
Oh, man. One of those decorative candles that you get at the county fair.
Yeah. There you go. Put a hat on it.
Yep.
Borrow John's hat, put it on the candle.
Wait, just because we name dropped John, I did want to, the one thought I had, the one note I made for this film is when Harry Dean Stanton does eat it in this film, spoilers, and like his car gets exploded by a semi truck and all that's left is flaming wreckage and a hat in the middle of the road. I'm like, that's how John's gonna go.
Okay, we got to just talk about it. Okay, so, like, his character's fine. Like, it doesn't matter. He just, like, has these moments with Sonny. It's nice. They're, like...
He's a father figure.
Clearly father-son
he
situation.
He has dad moments.
Dad moments with Sonny tension. Without knowing that it's his son.
It was pretty clear after the first one.
He knew it was his
son. Yeah, sorry. Without knowing, it was his dad. Let me rephrase. Yeah. And then he... leaves a gambling situation
and he finally wins. He wins a game of gin and he's like, everything's coming up Millhouse. And he leaves, he gets in his car, and as he turns his car on and starts to drive, Josie's like, don't do it. And he like pulls 3 feet out, a semi hits him, and his car explodes. Like, what the fuck is in that car?
Fireball.
Yeah.
Like that part of the movie, I was just like, what happened?
I thought the waiter was gonna like just come out and fucking knife him, like the waiter he threatened like two scenes earlier.
Yeah, he's like, I gotta close up. Oh, that waiter. Oh,
that waiter was a dick.
Yeah,
I knew he was about to die. I just didn't see death by exploding car after semi-truck collision being the cause.
No. Yeah, like that's the weirdest way to introduce his death. Yeah. Like, because you're right, he threatens this waiter earlier because they go out on a fancy date and
for Jules' birthday. Yeah,
for Jules' birthday, and she's like kind of
it's
kind of
all,
you know,
she
whatever.
Wants. Yeah,
so she has her shoes off and the waiter comes over and is a super dick, and he's just like, well, as you learn to use plates and napkins, you know. It's like, oh, fuck off, dude.
Yeah, he was a fucking piece of shit.
But yeah, Harry Dean Stanton then threatens to kill that guy.
Oh, and he has such a good scene of it, too. So like, good. He pockets one of the knives off the table and then
gets it right up the nose.
Yeah.
So, yeah, like, to your point, Sean, like, it would have been more interesting, I think, in a lot of ways, if that guy had been like, fuck this guy, I'm going to get mine, you know. But instead, it's just a random truck and your car full of explosives.
He got little girl in Wicker Man.
For real?
Yeah.
Yeah, that's exactly what I thought, too.
Nick Cage wakes up on a dock. That's the scene. Sees Harry Dean Stanton in the water, dives in after him.
The water explodes. What?
So he's dead. Then they see his grave, and it's like, oh, that's your daddy. It's like, oh, fuck, why didn't you tell me? Well, he was worried he was a failure. It's like, we're all failures.
Yeah,
that was like the one, like that was the one line that really, like, I really enjoyed. Was Jewel was like, it's easier to say than to live with.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, I really like that. That was probably my most impactful line, if I had to pull one from this film.
Oh,
it's
sure.
A solid line. It's a great scene that, again, just falls flat because nothing really builds to it. There's no like emotional arc there.
Yeah, it was pretty weak throughout. Yeah. It was definitely, I don't know, even a tertiary concern, if that.
Yeah.
That delivery, I really liked Franco in that. His reaction to the lines were really good. I felt like his emotions were pretty justified.
Franco does have some good like Cage out freakouts in this film.
Oh, like when he and Scott Conn are double teaming those sisters.
Yeah. Yeah.
Oh, and when he's like finds out she's like addicted to cough syrup.
Yeah. Which also
that was such a fucking weird thing.
Weird pivot.
Okay, so he goes on this double date with his buddy in Texas who ends up not being able to get him a bookstore job.
Scott Conn of Gone in 60 Seconds. Son of James Caan of Hollywood. No, what's the fucking Flying Elvis's one?
Oh, Honeymoon in Vegas.
Honeymoon in Vegas. Yeah. That's his dad.
Ooh, nice. Yeah. Well, you know, I see it. Yeah, I see it a lot.
Yeah.
So they go on a double date with these sisters, and obviously they end up back at sister's house. And so Franco hooks up with this chick. They're in bed and she's like, oh my God, you're so good at that. You should do that for a living. He's like, oh, I do. And then he explains all this thing about like being a whore. In his words, I'm a whore. Then she gets uncomfortable and then she goes to the bathroom and she's just drinking cough syrup. and he interrupts her and is like, what's this? And he starts getting super fucking aggro about it, and he's like, oh, you're addicted to codeine, and he's smashing things and he's just pulling everything out and he's yelling and he's freaking out, he's fucking naked, and we never saw Franco's dong.
No dong.
Yeah, close. We got close a couple times.
A lot of almost dong, a lot of butt,
lots of James Franco.
Very
butt.
Fit James Franco.
Yeah, at least three sets of boobs.
Okay, so there was Codeine woman.
There was
the older woman trick that he used to have.
Right.
And, the woman at the, fancy party? No, he just, tore her top. Oh, no, what about the cop one?
Yeah.
No,
when he pretended to be a cop?
No, we didn't actually get to see that.
Because
he gets her on the bed and handcuffs her. There's a scene where he's requested to go for a dress event, and he has to dress up like a cop and do cop stuff, and then he has to fuck her with the nightstick.
Yeah, and she sucks off the nightstick. Yeah. It's like everything about that, fuck cops, but not that way.
Yeah, I'm really glad he looked as uncomfortable with that situation as I felt.
Yeah.
So I'll rewatch it someday, and I'll text everybody that listens to this, all 13 of you, what that boob was. The missing boob. Yeah.
One of the things we mentioned in that, though, they get he and Mina Savari get contracted to go to a double date, you know, you fuck the man, I fuck the guy, or the lady. And
oh gosh.
Yeah. And it's like this big fancy party. And then there's this scene where he's eating a sandwich in the kitchen.
Oh yeah.
Crushing it into his fucking mouth. And I don't know. I can't remember. I think I was talking to you when I was coming back from somewhere the other day. And there was some comedian a while ago that was making fun of James Franco, maybe at his roast back in 2006 or something like that. And they were just like, James Franco just always looks like a person who's eaten a white bread sandwich, and you can just see the leftover white bread in the mouth, stuck in the teeth. And that's exactly what I was thinking about in that moment. And then immediately he's just like, I'm going to fuck you. Tears her blouse and throws her on the ground.
Yeah. He had no fucking care for fucking rhyme or reason in that. It was just like, oh, okay, well, the party's over. I got caught eating a sandwich in the kitchen. Yeah. Better fuck this hoe.
Better fuck her. And then we're going to go watch you, Mina Savari, fuck this dude. And he's just going to be like, oh, gee whiz. Gee whiz. That's it. Gee whiz.
I loved how fucking exasperated her face was during that whole fucking scene.
That was a great scene.
But the fucking wildest part was when the kids come in at the end.
No. They're just like, Mom, Dad, are you done fucking your horse?
Yeah.
Your casual Saturday night boring.
Yeah. I can't wait to throw a fancy dress party. You're all invited.
Oh, thanks.
I wear a turtleneck. Okay.
So I think we're at the point. We got to talk about Nick Cage. We got to talk about Nick Cage in this movie and his performance and the weirdness of the insertion of him as a character. Mm-hmm. But I do understand why Tommy Wiseau saw this movie and was like, Franco, that's my guy, because of these scenes where he's fucked up, he's crying, he's intense, he's all over the place, he's violent, he's crazy.
Yeah.
That's the part that I'm sure he watched and was
he's a
that
slave
is me.
To the emotions.
Right.
Mentioning that real quick before we get into right before the acid yellow scene, when he's super drunk and he's just outside that bar and there's the time lapse.
Oh yeah.
And he's just standing there with the
hurricane,
the classic hurricane kind of glass. And everybody's zipping around behind him, but he's just kind of wobbling because he's so fucked up. I thought that was really well
shot.
That
was cool.
I liked that a lot. That was a good shot.
Oh, my thought there was just the return of Iguanavision.
Oh yeah. Well, and it was also I think Whippet was playing in the background of that scene too. Great. Just sound design, music design in this was really, really well done.
Yeah. A lot of the technical aspects of this film were very tight.
Yeah.
So, yeah, Nick Cage's character, Asiello, is introduced right after this bender scene, right after Harry Dean Stanton's death, Franco find out about his father, goes on this bender, and shows up at the door of the pimp, Acid Yellow, because he wants a date, but with a man. And just this is where we're introduced to one of the weirdest Nick Cages ever.
Fake nose, classic of this era, the season three.
Yeah, what is with the prosthetic noses? Like, why?
I think that it was something that he was doing for a period of time that helped him, like, I'm a new character. Like,
right.
He was going through shit, like, he was fucking with his teeth, he was fucking with, like, his hairline, all this stuff. It's like, you get to be a new person if you, like, change some part of yourself.
It allowed him to disassociate with the celebrity Nick Cage to do these indie things.
I mean, that's my stretch on it. I don't know. Or he just is like, I'm going to be a weird dude in a Ferrari who goes, is everyone okay? Yeah, I don't know.
Yeah, it was a choice. But yeah, so he has like 5 minutes, less than 5 minutes of screen time. And most of what we see of him is through blitzed out first person.
Yeah, drunko vision is a good way to put it.
Yeah.
Sort of fisheye, flared out on the edges.
Beer goggled up. I'm not the biggest fan of drunk vision in a film as a device, unless, like, especially this late in the game. But the juxtaposition of, like, Nick Cage all blurry and, like, blitzed out from Franco's point of view, and then just turning to Franco and it just being kind of a normal shot because no one else is that gone.
Mm-hmm.
The green poodle on the bar was
green
gone.
And oh my red. God.
Yeah. A weird mini poodle too.
Yeah, I don't. Yeah. I didn't understand that. I didn't understand most anything about that scene.
It was a very eccentric.
Yeah.
Like home.
And it's so tonally out there for this film. Like it's a different film and it's not a good film at that point.
No.
It's a very brief sequence, but it just like it takes what trust we have in the storytelling up to this point. It's like, all right, we're done.
I will add just like a point for clarification in this scene. He didn't show up there because he wanted to fuck a dude. He showed up there because he had some extra energy to burn, as he said. And he was clearly just going there to beat somebody up. And the time of the film, yes, he's going to go up and beat up a gay guy. Because nobody's going to report it.
This did have my favorite quote of the entire movie.
Hmm.
It was Nick Cage. He does a line and he goes, I love cock.
That was my quote too.
I like that.
Yeah. No, it's just, it's sick cane sword though. Nick Cage pulls out a cane sword.
He does pull out a cane sword. But it's also like the oldest, like, schlubby man running after someone who's like, ah, I'm going to get you. You know, I even watched this on 1.5 speed because you know how I do.
Yeah.
And
yeah.
Even that, I was like, that's a slow dude. That's a slow run.
I just, for me, like, the way you put it, Nick, makes a lot of sense in terms of, like, why he would, like, go there to beat up a guy. Same effect. You could have just had him fight a guy in a bathroom. You could have had him just pick up a jaw and do it. Like the Nick Cage of it all and going specifically to a male whorehouse. It didn't need to be there. It didn't need to be its own location. And I feel like even for the timing of this film, like a lot of the implications of Nick Cage's character are in poor taste.
Yeah.
I just like this movie. Loses half a star just for this. Loses half a point just for this scene.
It's kind of too bad because I feel like had he not included himself in that crazed character, this movie would be better. It's kind of still how I feel about the whole thing. It's like it's all sort of like a medium good for me, and this makes it like a little dip where it could have just maintained the medium good. Like, I don't think this movie is like, oh, fuck, what a transcendent piece of art. But it's something, you know?
Yeah. No, it's got legs to it.
Yeah. Clearly everyone involved cared about what they were making.
Yeah.
Yeah, which is not what I was expecting going into this entire week, you know?
No, I expected this to be a must.
I expected some muff, too.
I also expected muff.
I expected this to be a must a much I expected this to be a much rougher watch. Before we get into the
KJO grid,
the very limited grid we can have for this one, I do want to just discuss the end of the film where, like, God, name, sorry, my brain today.
Mina Savari. Girlfriend.
Yeah.
Carol.
Carol. The guy, there's a guy that in the beginning of the movie, she's blowing and gets a car from. He's a car dealer. And he's like,
was it the same dude?
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's why at the end, she's like, he wants the car back. We're going to drive it to Mexico.
Got it.
Yeah.
Okay.
So it's, she says a couple times in the movie that every time, like, he always asks her to marry him. And so since Franco's like, we're not leaving, I'm not leaving this life, she's like, he's going to ask me again, I'm going to say yes. And she does. So they go to drive off, and there's the scene where, like, she's crying in the car and, like, Franco's running up after her, and they have the moment in the street where they embrace. Hard cut to Franco just in front of his mom's door again. I'm like, I like that.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I like the reality of that.
Yeah. The person imagining a better life, but, like, unwilling to take the steps to do it for themselves.
Yeah.
And just living in the fucking shit that they've developed for themselves.
Yep.
It's fucking real.
Yeah. The ending, the scene with the mom saying, it's easier to say we're all fuck ups than it's harder to live with that. Like, his freak out in the bathroom with the girl, and, like, how it's supposed to be different on, like, this side of things. Like, there are all these little moments of genius like that. Like, if we could extrapolate that into a whole film, great movie. Instead, we just kind of get these small little
kind of vignettes of it all. Yeah.
And it doesn't hold together, which is really, I think, the shame of this film. Yeah. And makes me wish Nick Cage maybe directed another film.
Yeah, so he kind of got into this window where it was like, this movie was panned critically. Hmm. It made no money. You know, it was a total fucking loss.
Like, what, 130,000 worldwide? Something,
yeah, like, disgustingly small amount of money. That's $130,000. I think that there's a part of it that, like, it tied into the weird, like, tax failure of the next decade that he has, where it's like, I can't take risks. I can't do this and, like, fall back on, my fortune or my name or any of these things that, like, I think he stopped directing because this hit at the wrong time. And that sucks because it's actually not bad.
Yeah, I would love to see him try again.
Yeah. And he might never,
he probably won't. We'll probably never see another Nicolas Cage directed piece.
And it's too bad. Yeah, because it really is not bad. And, he managed to get a crew together and, like, good actors. And, like, James Franco aside, he was a hot commodity at that point. Mm-hmm. Like, the people he surrounded himself with were artists with a vision that seemed to jibe with what he was doing, and it fucking worked. Like, it's way, way better and way prettier and way more put together than I ever thought that this was going to be going into this.
At a time where, like, his, like, A-list stardom was waning as well, like, this would have been a great transition if this would have worked out.
Yeah.
In retrospect, kind of glad it didn't, because now we have, like, Pig and Mandy and Joe, but
totally,
imagine a world where, like, Nick Cage kept making movies, kept, like, directing
Tom
films.
Cruise.
What?
In what way?
Like, just remained an A-lister forever.
Oh, sure. No, but I think Sean meant more like if he had the chance to become a director instead of,
like,
being...
if this movie would have hit, would he have, like, pivoted more to behind the scenes work?
Right.
I think he's always been a movie star.
Yeah.
Like, he's always described himself as a movie star. So, like, dipping his toes in here and there, probably. But yeah, I mean, like, to your point, though, like, that would be crazy to lose Nicolas Cage as an actor.
Right.
So,
or just at least we might have gotten less. I mean,
certainly just, season one and season two would be different.
Yeah.
Yeah.
All right. Well, let's just do the grid because we have to.
Okay. Good movie, good Cage. Bad movie, bad Cage. Good, bad, bad, good.
Yeah. Where do you put this one?
All my critiques of the movie aside, it's well made. It's the people who make it care what they're doing. It's like that comes through very well, and that means a lot as a, you know, for me. It's not boring. It just, you know, is missing some, could have used an edit. I think the movie was all
or
in
got
all,
over-edited.
Yeah.
Or got over-edited.
There's an editing issue.
There's an editing issue. I think the movie itself is pretty good. Mm-hmm. Nick Cage is the worst part of this film.
Yes.
Yeah.
As an actor.
Right. Right. Nick, what do you think?
I totally agree for once. I hate to put that on record, but yeah, Nicolas Cage is a, we got a bad performance in a movie that is structurally sound.
Yeah.
So it's a good film. If you're interested in character work that doesn't have a lot of like action to it, it's a pretty solid film.
Yeah, I agree. So next episode, we've got The Ant Bully, mm-hmm. which I'm sure is going to be a very, very different vibe.
Oh, I can't wait to hear how many times they say whore.
Oh, so many
times.
You're
just an ant whore.
Yeah.
Well, you're a whore, ant.
There's probably like a special ant word for whore.
We're going to pick it up.
We're going to find out.
Yeah.
Yeah. He plays like a wizard. I don't know. I think he shrinks a boy. That sounds bad.
So bad.
Wait, he's not the titular ant bully?
Well, so the ant bully, the main character is a turd to ants in his yard because he is being bullied by a human bully.
And then, so he's projecting.
So he's like the destroyer of their world. Mm-hmm. So the ants do magic and shrink him. So then it's a Honey, I Shrunk the Kids situation.
Nice.
And then I think the antagonist is a person hired to kill ants in the yard.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Like, or
like an exterminator.
Or Orkin?
An Orkin. Yeah.
Okay.
John Orkin.
Well, I can't remember. What's the...
An Orkin man.
Yeah, an Orkin yeah. man. Okay.
Yeah. So I think that's it. But yeah, Nick Cage is the wizard who shrinks the boy.
Mm-hmm.
I think his name is like Zok or Zog or I don't know. Whatever.
Fucking ant shit.
Ant shit.
Yeah.
Whatever the racist or, you know, misogynistic word for
I can't wait to get racist against ants. Yeah. I guess it's speciesist.
Specious.
I can't wait to get specious on something.
Gonna, oh, fuck them grasshoppers.
Yeah, fucking hoppers.
Oh, God, I don't like that at all. This already feels dangerous. All right. Thank you all for listening. Thank you to our Sparkle Buddies, Josh, Josie, Matt, Adam, Bill, Stuart, and Willow, and our Cage Dancers, John, Freeman, Nathan, and Cameron, and to Bill Panks for our intro music. And yeah, that's fucking it. Come back for the ant bully and figure out what ant racism is. Speciesism.
Speciesism.
Spism.
Spisms.
I don't like it. I don't like it at all.
Yeah. You're a fucking hopper lover.
Bye bye.
Bye bye.
All right, that's good enough.
Hold on, wait before you stuff that. I've got something that I brought here for us.
Oh Lord, what is it? What is it?
I got this in the mail today.
I don't know what this is, Sean.
What could I have gotten in the mail today?
I'm about to watch Nick murder Peter. It's terrifying.
It's a knife. It's a gun from the mail. Yes!
It's the LaBuzzy! Yeah! We got a LaBuzzy!
Send me a photo of it. I'll put it on our fucking Instagram.
Oh my God, it even says
Instagram.
Buzz Balls on it.
Oh my God. That's fucking fantastic. I love the LaBuzzy.